This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2018, held in Harrisonburg, Virginia on March 2 and 3.
Good morning. It's a privilege to be here. I'm curious, how many of you are serving your first term on a school board? Why don't you just stand up if this is your first term? All right. Thank you. And those who have served 10 or more years on a school board, let's see you. Anybody here? Served 10 or more years. Thank you. Let me sit down. I've sat as principal over the years. I've sat in meetings with three different school boards and three different schools where I taught. In those early years, I was a young man, an older youth, I guess. I started at 21, and so those men were older, somewhat sages and in charge, I thought. And then as time went on, I sat in meetings with my peers. And then a little story I heard a year or so after I was not serving as principal anymore, my son was principal, and he said he was in a meeting, a board meeting. And in that particular meeting, the board members were all former students of mine, that next generation. And a question came up about some significant dealing with the property, about some decision of doing something. And one of them wondered, who do we ask? Who's going to decide this? And one of the other ones said, it's us. It's the ball is in your court. You're now in charge. And as leaders, there you are. You're the leaders. And you all have heard the story probably of the leader who was out somewhere taking young people on a walk or a hike, and they kind of got ahead and actually got far enough ahead that they got out of sight. And then he met somebody coming the other way and said, did you meet so-and-so on the path? Oh, yes, they saw a group down there somewhere, where he said, I'm their leader. And as you're leading your schools, that's what you're tasked with, and as you're the ones who are in charge, and as board members, you are busy, in case you haven't noticed that, you're busy with many other things in life. And if anything is going to happen in life, it's going to happen while you're busy. You will not get a round to it. Now, one of my students actually made a round to it one time and brought it in for me to see, but it's going to happen while you're busy. And I commend you for taking time out of your schedules to come here. You're in charge, and as we think of school boards, there are many responsibilities. By the way, there's a handout for this session. You can pass that out if you didn't already. And it's just basically an outline you can make a few notes on if you want to, that more or less follows what I'm covering. Our session here is your teacher's influence. And we want to think of the influence of a school teacher. All of us have been influenced by teachers in ways practical and some ways we think about, in many ways we don't think about. Recently, I had reason to think back over the years. I have a picture here of my first grade teacher. That little boy beside her is me 61 years ago. And it's because of her that I can read. I don't remember a whole lot about that year, but my wife and I had the privilege of visiting her about a year ago. She was 96, and she did now go on to her reward. But she influenced many people in practical ways. We learned to read and learned many other things. And we often don't think about, just like we don't think about the things our parents did for us necessarily, the things our parents and those before us do are actually vital. They are life-giving in a variety of ways. I want to think about how a school board prioritizes its work. As you come here, this is not a meeting about teaching. We're not going to be talking about learning styles and how to manage classrooms. This is about your work. Giving direction to the school. And there are many things to think about as you're here. One of them is vision. And why do we have a school? And how do we keep that vision fresh? Who's involved? The school spirit. As a school board, a school council, one of the vital questions for you to ask is, what is our school spirit? If that is a huge aspect of what happens in your school. If there's a climate of wanting to be there, wanting to learn, you're well on your way to learning. So that's one of the things for you to think about. These are things for you to think about as board members. And then, of course, there are parents and parent relationships. And there's a board. Sometimes there's the board behind the scenes, or the ad hoc board, or those who have influence, even though they're not in elected positions. And there's all of those kinds of things to think about. And then there's the whole curriculum. What books should we have? What instructional methods? How do we have a classroom set up? Multi-grade, individualized, hybrid? How do we do this? What methods, what materials should we use? There's a couple rooms full of books down here you need to be sure to visit when you're here to see. And then there are the facilities. Just when you walk into a school building, even if the children aren't there, you get a feel when you walk into the building. As board members, walk into your building, walk into the restrooms, walk into the building. The feel of the facilities does affect the children. It affects everyone who walks in there. It's something to think about. And then there's a whole area of finances. How do we raise them? How do we spend them? And there's the area of communication, how we talk with one another, how we keep on the same page. And then, of course, there are teachers. The faculty. So anytime you're assigned a topic, it's the important one, but I'm going to say this morning that this last one is top priority for a school board. The teacher is the school. The teacher is the school. And yes, it's true that we need students, obviously, or we wouldn't have a school, but you can get students together. The teacher is a school, and there's a sense in which the teacher is a school incarnate. That's a term we use sometimes. We talk about God at the birth of Christ. God showed up in person. Well, we can do whatever talk we want about curriculum, methods, whatever. But when the teacher shows up, it's the teacher embodies whatever is going to happen in the school. It's, look at the teacher. Here is the school in flesh. Now, the board, you're giving direction to it, but typically you're not there day to day in the operation of the school. And you need to think of pioneer days. When you're out in the wilderness, we want to have a school. Well, if there was a teacher in the area, they could have a school. And in fact, they often didn't have many materials. And in many places, they don't have materials, much materials. A couple of us were in Congo last August working with a school there, a seminar, and they have 4,000 students and about 250 teachers, and they have very few materials. Chalkboards and chalk and desks. It really depends on the teacher. And it's true that today, when we have a flood of information, and especially in the digital world, it's more important than ever to have a teacher who incarnates a school, because life is lived in persons, not in machinery or digits or bits and bytes. It's people. And so the teacher is the school. Quote from Emerson White's School Management. The vital factor, I like this old-fashioned word. This book is from the 1890s, I think. Vital means life giving, that which is vital, vitality. The vital factor in the school is the teacher. Now, obviously, we're saying teachers if you have more than one, but we'll use the singular here. He is the cause. All else is condition and result. There are conditions in which the teacher functions. The conditions of the, for example, the student body and the support of the parents and the materials available and so on. Those are the conditions. And then there is a result that comes from things that happen. But the teacher is the cause. And the quality of the school, now every statement has its exceptions, but I'll just throw this out. The quality of the school will not exceed the quality of its teachers in general. And so I say, as a school board, the top concern at the top of the list for your concern, for you to think about, is who are our teachers? Who are these people who will enflesh the school? We can sit and talk all we want. We can order in materials. But who are these people? Teaching is very much a life-on-life activity. As the students learn from the time they enter school and first face the frustrations of remembering those math facts to the time when they're seniors and wrestle with issues of owning the teachings that they've been taught, the whole way through, the interaction of the life on life, often in unspoken ways between the teacher and the student, is exceedingly powerful in affecting how the student thinks about himself and so forth. Let's raise a few questions. Who is a teacher? Who is this person who is a teacher? Well, a teacher is someone who cares deeply about pupils. A teacher has that burden. If you only knew what belongs to you, this is yours. This is your heritage. God has given you, you have sleeping talents in a way, and as you work with these talents, you must wrestle, you must develop, you must learn the math facts, you must learn to read, you must do the thinking, but it's not going to happen in most cases unless somebody interacts with you. So he cares deeply about the person. But you know, caring about a person isn't enough. We can care deeply, we can weep, we can do whatever, but it actually takes something. The teacher also cares deeply about the subject. And a teacher cares, it's not a really helpful question to ask which he cares more. But the teacher also knows, and I think of this, I think it's an Isaac Watts hymn, "Why should the wonders God hath wrought be lost in silence and forgot?" And so the teacher has been there, or not necessarily has been there. Teachers at different ages teach out of different modes. When you're young and you jump into teaching, you're on that adventure mode. You're actually still exploring life with your students, and that's a very valid way to function. As you turn the rocks over, so to speak, and look what's underneath them, and you learn together, that can be very stimulating with students. And as you get a bit older and you know some more things, then you kind of know what's under that rock already, and you can have that twinkle in your eye and say, what do you think we're going to see when you turn the rock over? But you care about the subject, and you know the subject, and somehow, and this is the big question, he causes pupils to learn. And if you have a good Western mind, like many of us are trained to do, you're wondering, how do you do that? How, right? Tell me how to. Those books were very popular in the 80s and 90s. How to, if you want to sell a book, you just sell one. How to? Well, it's more than technique, but this does happen. And so teachers are a gift. I call attention to the scripture here in Ephesians. There's a list, and we won't put values on this. We'll simply say that there are these gifts that God gives, and not everybody who has a gift recognizes that he has a gift, or might not recognize it as a gift. But they are a gift, And not everyone who has this gift recognizes the ability. There was a saying I remember from years ago, something like this: a person who knows and knows that he knows is wise, you should follow him. But a person who knows and doesn't know that he knows is asleep, wake him up. So there are some who can teach and don't know necessarily that they can teach, and they are called to that. Teachers actually, as they serve, and by the way, anybody who works with children is in a way a teacher, whether you know it or not, and parents are huge teachers to their children, whether they know it or not. Obviously, we're thinking here of people who are called to teach, hired to teach in their schools, and insofar as you do the mundane, everyday things as you work with children, you have a heart for this, you have the hands, you have the feet, the mind, the voice, and you actually are doing with children and for children what Jesus wants done. He will not show up and do it in person. He's going to show up and do it through you. They are a gift. And so where do we find them? There's a session later on supporting teachers, also one on finding teachers. I will remind you of the passage in Acts where I remind us to look at the big picture here. The big picture was that they identified a need. And the need was, in that case, the need was taking care of some people who I believe needed food and taken care of. But look out from among you some men whom we may appoint over this business. I think the general principle is here, look out among you for people to appoint over this business. There is work to be done. The Lord does give gifts. And Moses was asked, what is that in your hand? Well, it was a shepherd's rod that he normally carried. And that rod went from just being a shepherd's rod to being the rod of God. The analogy, what is that in your hand? Who are the people among you? Who are the people among you? Some years ago, I came across these words: when the call to teach goes forth, the teaching sheep sense a stirring within themselves that drives them to the work. To teach by word and example the things of life which all the sheep know and practice. But they, the teaching sheep, find a special fulfillment and have no rest until they see the lambs know and practice the same things of life. And so we're not thinking of great phenomenal things that these teachers need to do to break new ground or come up with new ideas. In many cases, it's very mundane. My teacher taught me how to read. In fact, she used the method that was in vogue in those days: see, spot, run, look, 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 see the red ball. And somehow we learned to read. And other teachers picked up. Now, let's look at what's the significance of a teacher. I think of a scripture here from Luke that, reading it from, I believe, the Amplified, a student is not superior to his teacher, but everyone, after he is completely trained, will be like his teacher. This is a significant scripture to ponder regarding your teachers, because it's very likely that your students will think like and act like, in some ways, their teachers. We hope that's a good thing. It does raise a huge question as to who you put in the classroom. Do you want them to be like that person? And then there's this poem by Arthur Guiterman. Mark Hopkins sat on one end of a log and a farm boy sat on the other. Mark Hopkins came as a pedagogue and taught as an elder brother. I don't care what Mark Hopkins taught. For the farmer's boy, he thought he, all through lecture time and quiz, the kind of man I mean to be is the kind of a man Mark Hopkins is. As we think of the significance of a teacher, remember that it's very likely teachers will reproduce their kind in their attitudes, in their thinking, and their relationships with church, world, whatever. Also, another related to this, it's easy to find, we read in the scripture that there are many instructors. It's relatively easy to find people who can tell something. In fact, today, instructions can be privatized, can be farmed out, can be Googled, can be easily gotten. You can easily get information. But you have not many fathers. Now, the Mark Hopkins poem talked about an elder brother. And there's this aspect of teaching. Your teachers have a relational aspect with your students that go beyond the instruction. The instruction is important, don't get me wrong. But there's that relational aspect, depending on who that person is, depending on the age of the person, the relationship. There might be the elder brother. When I started teaching, I was somewhat of an older brother type person to my, I was a 21-year-old to my junior high students. But as you get older, then it's more like somewhat of a father relationship. And the last couple of years, it was more like a grandfather relationship. There is that personal aspect that is significant. The work of a teacher. What's the work? A couple scriptures here referring to the reading of the scripture. I believe this is in Nehemiah. They read in the book, and they read the law. They read it distinctly, but apparently that wasn't enough. Even though it was God's law, just reading it distinctly was not enough. Somebody also gave the sense, and here's back to our word called, they called them to understand. Somebody did something, spoke some words somehow that caused the people to understand what they were hearing. And another passage on the same topic is the passage there with Philip and the eunuch. He asked, and this man's reading in Isaiah, and he asked, do you understand? And he said, well, how can I except someone guide me? So even when you can read with good enunciation and you can understand or you can pronounce the words well, that doesn't mean that you understand what you read. So a teacher helps the person to understand. The teacher cares deeply about the student, as I mentioned earlier, but also about the subject. The picture on the left I just got somewhere. The one on the right is actually a picture I took in Congo last year in the practice teaching session. And you can imagine the teacher here being interested in what he's teaching, something about plants and roots. And as the person is taken up with his subject, there's a way that draws the students into that. And even though the teacher doesn't have time necessarily to prepare a long lesson, because in a multi-grade setting, sometimes the classes are very short, and sometimes the schedule is so full that the teacher must primarily help answer questions and help the students, but there's still a way that the teacher has to awaken interest in the subject, in the student, whatever that subject is, from language to plants. And another aspect of the teacher, I like the word catalyst. A catalyst is something that is involved in what's going on, but it's really needed for something to happen. For example, you may have You may have fuel, you may have oxygen, but in order to get a fire started, you need enough heat to get it going. And so you take the lighter there and it gets it going. And there are other catalysts. And somehow, when you can have students in a room and they can be working, or there can be materials there, but if the teacher's not there, well, what happens when the teacher walks out of a room? There's almost something immaterial that happens oftentimes. It isn't that the students no longer understand the material. They don't suddenly lose understanding. They don't suddenly lose motivation necessarily, but something happens. There's a catalyst. And I came across this picture the other year, which I like the illustration here of how the focus, you can see the focus is on the globe. The focus is not here on the people, but on the globe. And you can imagine them together. There are several things happening here, but for one thing, there's camaraderie with the group. They're looking at the globe. You can imagine them talking about ideas of the world being round and perhaps the oceans and how deep the oceans are and where we live and so on. But somehow, because of the teacher, they're able to come together, focus on this and learn in this, and all this is happening at once. They're having a relationship with each other as a byproduct of what they're doing, and they're learning something about the subject together. The teacher causes somehow the pupils to learn. Let's look at the legacy of a teacher. I think of the scripture when they saw the boldness of Peter and John. They took knowledge of them, that they had been with Jesus. And a teacher does leave a legacy. Teachers shape the next generation. Let's think a bit about authority versus influence, the influence of a teacher. Teachers do need authority, and authority is the power to command, and oftentimes when you're present or regularly interacting with children, you have authority to command thought, opinion, or behavior. But let's think of influence. Influence is the power to produce an effect without apparently exerting any force, without a direct exercise of command. Students are influenced by some people, and you cause an effect somehow in an intangible way. There are people of influence, or people that, because they are who they are and do what they do, the people around them want to do what that person does. And that's something for us to think about. So as a school board, you want to ask, what are the influences of our teachers? I'd like us to think for closing minutes here. What are the influences? You're the board. You're on the board. And I have an analogy here. Here we have a captain or a pilot of a ship. So the person who's actually at the controls, that being your teacher, is the one who actually directs the ship. But he doesn't own the ship. It's the board that decides where the ship's supposed to go, where it's supposed to haul, what the rates will be, and all that. But they're sitting in a room around the table. It's the person out there that's going to do it. But they do need to be in touch with what's happening. So using that analogy, as a board, and you think of the influences of your teachers, remember, learning is transformative. Nothing in a school influences students more than their teachers, for good or for bad. And so here are some questions to ask as a board. The first two are kind of logical. I won't spend much time on that. Are the children actually developing the skills they need? My first grade teacher taught me to read. As a school board, are our children learning? Are they learning what they need? And if so, good. If not, why not? Are they learning the content? And by the way, one comment here, remember the influence. The teacher said, it's amazing the influence of teachers. Children will sometimes say, well, the teacher said so-and-so. So it's significant who you have, what kinds of things your teacher is saying. But let's look at other things. Are the children learning how to learn? Are they becoming learners? Children are developing attitudes. What attitudes are our children developing? What patterns of thought are they developing? One of the huge ones is their concepts of self. What are they developing? I'd like to refer here to Jonathan Erb told the story this last fall on a workshop tours about Ruth Garber. Apparently, Ruth Garber taught in this area somewhere. Does anybody know about Ruth Garber? She was a teacher, I think, taught in the 1930s, somewhere here in the Valley. The point being that she gave to her students, each of her students apparently, at least one year, a little card with a saying on it. And Jonathan's experience in meeting with some of these students was that this influenced them for life. I'll just give the three here. Three different people that he talked to. One of these people carried this card with her for the rest of, I think, in their wallet. And one of the men said, "I always tried to live up to it." The words that a teacher speaks to a child can have a huge impact for life. What kinds of influences are your teachers leaving, especially on those younger children? And then in closing, I have a list here of other influences. What kinds of attitudes are your children developing about others? This comes up as you talk about current events and history. What attitudes are they developing about the world around them and how they look at the world? Are we the best? Are we the worst? What is important? What matters? What attitudes are our children developing as they interact with their teachers about what is important, what matters? How do you think about things? How should we think about this? These are influences that a child picks up. And how do we react? How do you react to things that come your way? When things are difficult, frustrating, how do you react? And how do you take responsibility? How do you face responsibility and take responsibility? This is a saying I photographed off a wall of a classroom one time. Cultivating morality. Teachers have an influence this way, often in unspoken ways by things they have on the wall. Learn to make the most of life, lose no happy day. Time will never bring you back, chances swept away. Leave no tender word unsaid, love while life will last, for the mill will never grind with water that is past. The kinds of things a teacher has on the wall influence the students. Being a model, teachers have a huge influence by being a model for such a time as this. I'd like to, in closing, just say a few words about the need for teachers and teaching. The question would be, why bother with taking the time to build foundations when the needs for building are so pressing? I mean, we really have so many needs out there in this world that we don't have time or interest, perhaps, to go into teaching. So why teach? Well, recently, there was a quote in the Light Lines that fits right into this, and I'll just read this quickly. It said, 200 boys in the large slum section of a city were surveyed. They don't have a chance, concluded the analysts. 25 years later, 180 of those boys were contacted again. All but four were successful businessmen, lawyers, and doctors. Each one, when asked how he succeeded, said, "There was a teacher." And so, why teach? Well, if the needs are pressing, if you need buildings, you need people to build the buildings. You can't just get a finished product without taking the time to do it. I'll read a quote from in the last issue of Lightlines. This was just very appropriate that this came out in time for this meeting. Diana Kernelson, I had the privilege of having her at summer term at Faith Builders the other summer. "Why teach," Diana says. "Why teach reading comprehension to fluent readers when hundreds in my country can't decode words? Why teach math when I could be secretary for a great ministry? Why teach art to creating minds when I could be doing disaster response work? Why teach Bible to church children when I could teach about Jesus to children who never heard? The needs out there are so pressing. Why teach learning to read to youngsters when many grown men can't even reach the Bible? Why teach social studies when millions on the globe are waiting for us to come and preach? Why teach science when I could be practicing in a medical facility? Why? I teach them with the prayer that every class I teach will equip not only myself, but 10 others to teach the illiterate, to serve on missions, to comfort the hurting, to feed the hungry, to aid the feeble, to understand other cultures, to preach the word, to heal the sick. And so, if the need is great for workers, we need to more than ever focus on preparing. And so that's just a burden I have, as there's great needs and there's great interest out there serving in the world. Many, many people who have that ability to teach and could build so that hundreds could serve. If you go serve out there yourself, and if we don't give attention to building, why, we're affecting the next generation. And so I leave us with the scripture, pray the Lord of harvest that he would send forth laborers, because the field is ripe for harvest.
Thank you. This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.